This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. Meredith College in Raleigh is showcasing local and women filmmakers this Sunday. The Meredith College Documentary Film Festival will include both short and full-length films. In fact, we've talked about several of them on this show recently.
These women are the fabulous 70s from Raleigh, North Carolina. They've been playing together for 17 years in senior games all over the country.
I love it. I'm going to play just as long as I'm able to play. A lot of people say, oh, I can't play because I got arthritis and this, that, and the other. If you're on the court, you forget all about that.
That was from Granny's Got Game by Angela Alford about Senior Women's Basketball League, one of the feature-length films that's going to be screened at the Meredith College Documentary Film Festival. But today we're delving into some of the shorter works, and we are joined by two local filmmakers. First, Joan King-Whittefield, whose film Rainy Season is an intimate account of a Vietnamese family that was touched by tragedy. Joan, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us more about this film, Rainy Season.
Rainy Season is about a family, a rubber tree farming family in central Vietnam, who are affected by unexploded ordnance. And the way I met them is that I was working with an NGO advising them, doing therapy in the field with victims of bombs. And I went there over three years each year, and every year there were more and more people who were affected by bombs. I'd meet children whose legs were blown off by cluster munitions and families who lost children, farmers who got injured or killed. I met with their families and also scrap metal collectors. And I would look at my colleagues and say, we really need to let people know about this. And so I decided to make a film on it. And that's when I went to film school in San Francisco and learned a little bit about that and decided to make this film.
Yeah, so you were not a filmmaker then. What was your background?
My background is in psychology. I have a doctorate in psychology, and that's how I was doing treatment in the field with these victims of bombs. And I was also training the staff about PTSD and trauma because that was my expertise. And I realized that they really knew more than I did because they saw it every single week. Every single week at that time when I started in 2001, people were being injured every single week. You know, sometimes a child would play with a cluster munition and 11 children would get injured and a couple of them killed. So, and the thing that struck me the most is that these were our bombs. Our country dropped about 8 million tons, upwards of 8 million tons of bombs on Vietnam, the size of New Mexico. And many of them, about 10%, are not exploded at the time. And they become even more dangerous over the years. And, you know, you can even touch them and they can go off. So children, and they're all over the place.
More dangerous in that they are more volatile.
Exactly. Yes.
And you know, and bear in mind, the U.S. involvement ended over 30 years ago. And this stuff is still around. And you say you're seeing more and more people affected by this.
Yes, people are affected. And when I go there, it's I feel like I'm in a war zone when I'm in the central provinces. And actually, in the last 10 years, it's decreased a little bit because there is a lot of effort being done by a couple of organizations to clear the mines. But according to one of the experts who I met and worked with there, he said it'll take 100 years to clear the mines that we dropped there.
Your film focuses on a family that was affected. What is the impact? Tell us their story and the impact on them, but also on sort of the psyche of people who have to live with this every day. Are they aware of this, the dangers? What does it do to people?
They are aware of them, and there's no way for me to know exactly what it does to them, but I can just tell you from what I saw. The story is about the Huang family, and I met them about 6 months after their son was killed by a mortar. And so what I did was I went and filmed them over the next 5 years. We filmed four times. We had to do it under the radar of the government because of the Vietnamese government, because they are very wary of media. And so we had to sneak in and say we weren't filmmakers. We were interested in the NGO. So what happened was they were taking a nap. The family was taking a nap during the midday, and the little 7-year-old said he wanted to go find grasshoppers because he wanted bait to fish. And he came back with his mother thought it was a piece of firewood, and because she was watching the buffalo. And he went in the little napping shack, and a moment later she saw a huge explosion. And so luckily the father was injured, but not very badly. And the other son was not injured badly, but the 7-year-old boy died immediately after a couple hours. And so my film is about the grief of the family. And what I want people to understand is once the peace is declared, it doesn't mean that the civilians are still, are immediately in a safe situation. And mostly in wars, mostly civilians are the ones who get killed, and it's usually poor civilians. And they're marginalized, and they're far away from us, so we don't think about it.
And you said that your background is in psychology, then you learned filmmaking. What did, if anything, how did making this film change your understanding of the kind of impact this is going to have on people?
That's a really good question. I think what I learned, what became very clear to me, is that in Vietnam, and probably in a lot of places, maybe here too, after someone in the family dies, you don't really get the chance to talk about it very much. People want to forget about it. And so over the 5 years that we met with this family, the mother really, really, I believe, loved talking to us because we were recognizing her pain and something that she wouldn't have had the opportunity to experience without us being there.
Is there a general awareness of first of all, the availability, the presence of these weapons and their danger?
Yes, there is. And the farmers and the scrap metal collectors and the children know about it, but it still happens. The farmers have to hoe, and the scrap metal collectors feel like they have to make the money by doing that because the scrap metal is very high priced right now because of all the construction in China. And children, you teach them 1 year about this issue and they forget about it once they see a shiny piece of metal that looks so interesting.
What can be done? Is there enough? Again, the war for the Americans ended over 30 years ago. So, what can we do now, I guess, to stay aware of this? And is there anything Americans can do?
Well, we can donate to the victims assistance organizations. ClearPath International is the organization that I worked with and that I followed in this film. And also there are other organizations who do clearance, like MAG, Mine Advisory Committee, and Project Renew. And also, I hope that this film can stay with people. And when the next time one of our leaders wants to go to war, I hope that we can remember that bombs kill people, and usually civilians.
And for a long time after the peace, or so-called peace, is made. Your film is going to screen now at the Meredith College Documentary Festival. How cool is it that Meredith has got a film festival
now? It's very cool. And I graduated from Meredith in 1979, so, yep. And it's very exciting. It's very nice.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing that film. Joan King Whittefield is a local filmmaker. The film is Rainy Season, going to be at the Meredith College Film Festival on Sunday. Thank you for being with us, Joan. And with us now is Kristen Bedford, another filmmaker whose film Field Notes, Durham Noir, is going to play at that same festival. And her work is an aesthetic and emotional interpretation of a specific place in Durham. Kristen, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. Tell us more about this film.
It's a short city symphony, and it focuses on the part of Durham, the desolate, emptier areas around Highway 147. And it, I chose the film noir genre as the lens from which to shoot the film. So it's in black and white and low angles and deep shadows and evocative of the the urban cityscape in that way.
Of that urban, I mean, it's interesting because, of course, when you think of Durham these days, it's about the throb and the infill and the fact that people are coming to it and it's coming alive. You chose to focus on this place that's clearly desolate. And what was it about? Was it the particular location? Was it over and against this other narrative of Durham that got you going on this idea?
Well, I moved here from Los Angeles a year and a half ago, and my background is as a street photographer, so wandering around streets and, you know, getting a sense of the place is part of who I am. So when I got here, I walked the streets and, you know, got a sense of the place. And I was struck by that area because it seemed to divide the region so distinctly, and it is so close to downtown, and it struck me as that. And I didn't actually go filming with a specific thing in mind. I brought the camera. I knew I wanted to shoot in black and white, and I was interested in doing it at night. And the city in that space sort of revealed itself. I didn't have a direct intention.
You call it a symphony. How is this film put together, and what does symphony have to do with it?
A city symphony dates back to the 1920s and the avant-garde tradition of, you know, responding to modernity and the new urban centers and progress. And so it's a tradition that comes from that. And I think that I follow in that tradition of, you know, there's no sets, there's no characters per se. The characters are the sidewalks and the buildings and the people who inhabit those spaces. And so it doesn't actually need to have a score. It could be a silent symphony. It's the visuals that are evoking everything. In the case of this film, I did do an original score for it, also to add to the ambiance of it, with a Durham composer, Dan Ruccia, who plays viola for it. And it was really wonderful to be able to so specifically create a mood in the studio.
How did you work with Dan? Did you shoot it first? Were you showing him segments, finished product? How did it go?
So I shot and edited the film, and then I went into the studio with him, and I talked to him about how I wanted a minimalist score, and then we played the film, and he improvised and intuitively responded, and then we would stop and, you know, we'd talk about it, okay, maybe, you know, change this or hold back on that, and we just went back and forth and back and forth until sort of this textural series of audio vignettes was pulled together. One of his strengths is that he's really good at creating texture in sound, and I thought that was a really great fit for this particular film piece.
I'm curious to know if you saw this space as a great opportunity for this kind of a film. So is it a commentary on that space, the way it looks and feels, or that space's place within this larger context, this city called Durham?
I think first and foremost, it's a aesthetic and visual journey. And I think, if anything, it's a question about that space. I think in its highest form, it's a query into, you know, what was there or why is it empty or, you know, what is happening with the neighboring businesses because they are featured in it. And I think that a larger symphony can be made. This is only one corner of Durham. I feel like it could be expanded, you know, tenfold, and it could be an amazing
I'll ask you the same a version of the same question I asked Joan, which is that this Meredith Film Festival now is showcasing many local and many women filmmakers. Is that important to do women? How do women fit these days? Is it tough for women to get in, or tougher in the film business?
I was raised by a documentary filmmaker, my father, and he gave me a camera when I was 5 years old, and he said, "Go and show me what you see." And bring it back. So I haven't ever made work based on anything except for the intention that I'm making it. That said, I don't live in a gender-free vacuum. When Catherine Bigelow got, you know, Best Director, the Academy Awards for Hurt Locker in 2009, I was ecstatic. I mean, that was amazing that she was recognized in that capacity. So clearly, there's something to be said. There's an emotional response to women breaking into the industry. But personally, as an artist, as a photographer, as a filmmaker, it's more about the impetus to create and not about being a woman.
Well, we can see your creation this Sunday, January 26th, at the Meredith Documentary Film Festival. Kristen Bedford's film is Field Notes, Durham Noir. Thank you, Kristen, for joining us.
Thank you.
Kristen's film, along with Joan King Whittefield's Rainy Season, are going to play at the Meredith College Documentary Film Festival Sunday, January 26th. It's in Carswell Auditorium at Meredith. Space is limited, seating available, first come, first serve. It is a sad day for us. Here at the State of Things, we are losing the extraordinary producer, Alex Grandos Granados, who has been with us. He was an intern when he started here, and I was just beginning on this program. He was a lowly intern. He is now a lowly producer. He's fantastic. His imagination, the way he conceives and thinks about stories, has made us such a powerful and different show, much more imaginative than we would ever be without him. He is not only a sci-fi buff and aficionado, an extraordinary producer. He's also a magician. And frequently, as I'm walking to the studio to do what I consider a very important radio show, he says, no, wait, look at this. This is, you're going to love this. You're going to love this. And I will love it, but maybe at 1 o'clock, not at noon. We will miss him deeply. He's going off to the Fuqua School, the business school at Duke. No, not too far at all. He's just around the corner. And when, as I know this will happen, when the global financial economy collapses and public radio then takes control of all the world's business schools, Alex will be back. But until then, we will miss him deeply. Alex, we love you. Good luck. We never close. Come back soon. And what you will be coming back to is the State of Things, whose technical director is Robin Copley, whose news director is Brent Wolf, Laura Lee, Megan Modafferi, Nicole Campbell, Sean Wen, and Alex Granados are our producers. And this is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.